This is Digital Story Podcast number 642, July 3rd, 2018. Today's theme is Shake It Up. I'm Derek Story. There are days when I go into my photo cave and I just start spreading things around. Lenses, filters, gels, reflectors, diffusers, and whatever else I have within reach. Then I start looking for interesting combinations. I want to do something different. I want to shake it up. And that is the topic of today's TDS Photo Podcast. Well, as you can imagine, I probably have, let's say, 5 tips or so for shaking it up. And really what I want to do today is just have us do something different. It's summertime, and summertime to me always feels like a time to experiment. I don't know why. It might be the heat gets to me, the longer days. I'm not sure what it is, but every time summer comes around, I want to start playing. And maybe because I have more time to play, right? I mean, I get off work and it's still light outside. I can still go do things. I can take pictures and get into trouble and stuff like that. So that's why I'm talking about this today. Now, many of my tips focus around mirrorless cameras, but not all of them. And the reason for that is mirrorless cameras are just so flexible when it comes to what you can mount on them. I love this part of the format. So in my case, for example, I shoot Micro Four Thirds. So I can put my Olympus lenses on there and my Panasonic lenses on there. Fantastic. I love them. I love every one of those lenses I have from those two brands. However, I have these adapters, which you can, you know, get pretty affordably. And I can do all sorts of other stuff. In fact, that's going to be our first tip. I just gave you more than foreshadowing on that. So that's one of the things you can do. But there's all sorts of other stuff that you can do that you can mount to the camera or techniques that you can use to produce images that look different than what you're doing most of the time. So, well, let's just stop with the foreshadowing and let's just get to the plot, right? Let's just get to what we're talking about here. So let's start with the first one, which I already started talking about, and I'll finish it now, which is old lens, new camera. Now, I've talked about this before. This isn't news, but what happens is over time, you know, those adapters, they go on the shelf. We don't use them. And then the next thing you know, it's been a long time and we haven't done any of this at all. We haven't taken an old manual focus lens and mounted it on our brand new mirrorless camera to see what we can see. And a lot of times I have to tell you, it is absolutely fascinating. So the latest one that I've done, in fact, I just did it this week. In fact, I'm going to run a photo in the show notes from this combination, which is a Zeiss 85 millimeter lens, f1.4. And this lens was made for contacts cameras, contacts film cameras. I got a really good deal on it. And this is the thing that I love about these old lenses on new cameras, in that you can get deals on these things. If you're not in a hurry and you just shop around, you can get some really sweet lenses for some great prices. So I put this 85 millimeter Zeiss lens, f1.4, just opened it up all the way on my Olympus OMD EM1 Mark II. And I started taking pictures, just wide open, f1.4, just let her fly. And I just set the camera in aperture priority mode and everything else just happens. I mean, one of the very nice things about any camera that has in-body image stabilization is that most of the time they'll let you put any lens on there. Some cameras have restrictions, the Olympus don't, and that lens is stabilized. So my 85 millimeter lens, which is actually now 170 millimeters field of view, is stabilized because it has sensor-based image stabilization. And the pictures with that lens look different. They just look different than any of the other cool lenses that I have. So my point here is that if you haven't done this in a while, go out and get yourself a new lens, right? Because I'm not talking about going out and spending $1,000 on a new lens. I'm talking about go out and find one for 30, 40, 50 bucks. Now, the Zeissons cost me a little bit more than that, but still a fraction of what it cost in the day. But you can get a lot of great stuff for 50 bucks. Put it on your adapter and go take some pictures. You don't have an adapter, you say? Oh my gosh, well then this is really good. Find an adapter. I have Contax Ashika and I have Pentax, but they have them for Canon, Nikon, all of them. Find an adapter for a lens that you want to put on your mirrorless camera. Get the adapter. You can get the adapters for like 15 bucks now, and they work great. Get the adapter, then pull out a lens out of your closet if you've got one, or buy one, and go take some pictures. It is so fun. You know, you do the manual focus, you open up the aperture all the way. There are no automatic functions at all. You have to do the focusing manually, and then you have to work in stop-down mode on the aperture, which means you focus with it wide open, and then if you want to close down, you just go ahead and close it down, but the camera will go ahead and calculate the right exposure for you, so that's not a problem at all. And it is a blast. I have to tell you, it is a blast. Another lens that I really like, I have a 135 millimeter f3.5 Pentax telephoto, the kind with the lens hood built into it that you just slide out. Oh, it's such a neat lens. It's got its own character. It works great on mirrorless. And of course, on mirrorless, it's a 270 millimeter f3.5, at least on my Micro Four Thirds cameras. So much fun. If you haven't done it before, get the adapter and try it. If you've done it before, get yourself a new lens, pull out the adapter, and take some shots. I think you'll really enjoy the different looks that you can get. It's like having one foot in the analog world and one foot in the digital world when you do old lens, new camera. All right, here's the second one. Real filters. Yes, real filters for real photographers. Yes, we can do a lot of stuff in post-production. We can, well, we all know, we've been talking about all the effects that we can add to our images in post-production. But doing the filtration or doing the effect up front, well, there are a few benefits to it. And I'm going to give you an example. So with that 85 millimeter lens I was telling you about, I also scored a Zeiss Softar 1 filter. And the Softars came in 1, 2, and 3, 1 being the mildest version and 3 being the strongest. And they had this unique way of taking the edge off an image without losing its sharpness. It's really kind of clever. It's a very simple filter, just goes over the front of the lens. Well, the thing about it is when you create your effects with filters over the front of the lens, then it's easy to reproduce. So if you find a look that you want, in this case, let's say the Zeiss 85 millimeter with the Softar 1 filter at f2. Let's say that I really like a portrait that I did with that. I can reproduce that easily because it's physical, it's mechanical, right? It's all right there. Whereas trying to remember the settings that you did in post-production or the exact, did I do 80% on that slider or 30%? You know, all those sort of things, those formulas that you have to try to remember, none of that. Put the filter on the lens, put the lens on the camera, take the picture. If you like the way it looks, then you can do it next week, you can do it next month, and you can do it next year. And there are all sorts of interesting filters. Of course, there are the Softars that I'm talking about, or any softening filter. Those are very interesting. But then I saw a photographer, in fact, I posted on Facebook last week. He's a street photographer, and he puts neutral density filters on his camera for street photography. So what he does is it slows the shutter speed way down, and he finds someone that isn't moving, and then in the middle of a lot of people that are moving, steadies the camera and takes a shot. And the effect that he was getting was that the person that wasn't moving was sharp, looked good, and then there's this whole urban life swirling around him or her. Really interesting street photography done with a simple ND filter. Just put a neutral density filter over the front of the lens, perfected his technique, and created these really interesting shots. Filters, glass filters, the kind that you put over the front of the lens, or even Kokin filters. There are all sorts of different types, and there's all sorts of different things that you can do with them. Something to keep it in mind, and a great way to shake up your photography. The third one I wrote about today, actually, Monday, and I published it on the Digital Story, so you can go look up that article if you want. I'm going to call number three, wet it down. Wet it down is such a simple technique, and I showed a before and after picture, and basically, I had a nasturtium that was growing up through a wood pallet. I love it when plants do this. They are intrepid, aren't they? It was growing up through the wood pallet, and it was cute. It wasn't too big yet. And I just loved the shot. I mean, I was out, you know, kind of tending the garden a little bit, and I saw it. It was my patio garden at the studio. And I saw it there, and I go, oh, that's adorable. And wow, that's, you know, that's pretty tough, too. So I wanted to take a picture of it. So I did. So I just pulled out my iPhone. I didn't go get a camera or anything. I just pulled out my iPhone and snapped a shot. And I looked at it and I go, that's nice, but I bet it would look really cool if I wet everything down. Because it had this nice wood, you know, this nice wood palette. And the nasturtium was this pretty green. So I got the hose in this case and just kind of sprayed down the area. And then I took the same shot again. And what I did in the article is I showed the before and after. And it's amazing how different the shot looks after everything's been wetted down. So in other words, you know, water is the original saturation filter, right? it really is. Now, some people say that they carry spray bottles with them sometimes when they go out and do macro photography. And I think that's a pretty cool idea. And I mean, you can, just like any technique, you can overdo this. You can do too much of it. But there's something about wetting down a shot before you shoot it sometimes really, you know, changes it. And I think a lot of times makes it better. And of course, you can hedge your bets on this by shooting it straight, right? Do it the best you can straight. Then go ahead and wet it down and shoot it again. And then just pick the one that you want. It's a very simple technique. And sometimes it yields really nice results, and it's something that, you know, we just don't think to do. Yet, it's so easy. Okay, number four. This one is wild, and I haven't done this one myself for a while, and I've got it right here. I'm going to pull it out. Pinhole adapters. Pinhole photography is very interesting, but a lot of times the apparatus that we use for pinhole photography is not very fun. You hear me probably fiddling with trying to get this case open. I got it now. However, some folks, such as this company right here, Pinwide, P-I-N-W-I-D-E, made in Chicago by wanderlustcameras.com. Wanderlustcameras.com. Pinwide. It's an adapter that you just put on your Micro Four Thirds camera, just like you would any lens, and then just put it on there. And then suddenly you have a pinhole camera, but you have one where you can, you know, review the shot right after you've taken it. You can compose it on the LCD. You can play with all the, you know, exposure settings, not aperture, of course, because it's pinhole, but shutter speed and exposure compensation. Get it the way that you want, and then you have a digital pinhole shot. And these things, they're very interesting. You know, suddenly, let's say that, oh, you want to create a look, or you want to convey some sort of feeling about something. Let's say that you're shooting some old buildings, and you go, you know, these old buildings look nice, but when I shoot them with my super sharp digital lens, they don't look as old. They just, you know, they look, they're too crisp. They don't have any character to them. Well, this is a situation where you could use one of the older lenses that I talked about, or you could use something like this Pinwide adapter and shoot a pinhole version of it. And then you get a completely different look. In fact, that would be an interesting experiment, wouldn't it? We'll take an old barn for this example. So you shoot it with your super sharp digital lens on your mirrorless camera. All right, best you can. Then let's say that you use an adapter and you shoot it with an analog lens from the 1970s or the 1980s, best you can. And then you shoot it with this pinhole adapter line it up, do everything best you can. And then go back home, load them on your computer, and compare them and play with them and see, you know, what you can get out of them. I think that's a fascinating exercise, and it'd be very interesting to see, you know, which version you picked for the barn shop. And I think subject would dictate a lot of times, you know, which method was most fitting for the subject that you were recording. But that would be a lot of fun. And these pin wides, I mean, it is a plastic disc. It doesn't weigh anything, doesn't take up any room in your camera bag. You can have it with you all the time. Very cool, very fun, very unpredictable, and not always easy to use. But it's like a lot of things like this. When you nail it, it's fantastic. So that is the pin wide adapter. And of course, you know, I have all this information in the show notes. You know that already. You can go there. You can get the links. You can get the exact name, and, you know, you can find out where to get this stuff. Not very expensive, these little things, and a lot of fun. And they come in this cool little metal case that protects it and looks kind of interesting in itself. Number five. Oh, I haven't talked about this in a while, and it is so much fun and perfect for summer. Infrared photography. Infrared. Now, a lot of times people think that you have to, you know, have a special camera to do IR photography. And a modified camera is a great way to go. And if you have an older camera, let's say that, you know, you've upgraded a couple times and you've got a 12 or 16 megapixel version of the camera around, it might be one that you want to send in, spend a couple $100 to have it adapted for IR photography. Another way to go for infrared photography is to use a filter. Just do the filter approach. And in this case, I use the filter that I use here. In fact, I'm playing with it right now, is a Hoya. I have a Hoya infrared R72 filter. Now, this is a very dense filter. I don't know how many stops it is. It's four or five stops, probably. It's pretty darn dense. And you just, you know, put it over the front of your lens, and then you're probably going to have to steady your camera unless it's really bright out there. Although I must admit, I do a lot of this photography handheld. Again, the image stabilization systems really help us out, don't they? They really help us out. And then you can just go take infrared shots. Now, why do I like infrared photography so much during the summer? Because the best time to go out and shoot these shots, infrared, is the worst time for all the other types of photography, which is in the middle of the day, when it's super bright, when it's super contrasty, perfect for IR photography. Just go out, find yourself an orchard, a vineyard, any sort of thing. I mean, it's very interesting to see what happens. And if there are clouds in a blue sky, oh my gosh, you're going to have so much fun with this. Now, one of the ways that you can check your camera, because some cameras have stronger, you know, IR blocking filters in them than others, you can check your mirrorless camera or your compact camera, anything that would accept this filter, is that you just use your TV remote, which is an infrared remote, turn on a live view so that you can see the image on the screen, and then just press your remote, you know, point it at the front of the camera so that it's going through the lens, and press a button so that it activates it, so it thinks it's going to change a channel or something. If you can see a light on the LCD when you press the remote, then you have a camera that's probably pretty good for IR photography, because it's seeing that IR light. And I usually do this in a darkened room, so it makes it easier to see it on the LCD. But I have a couple cameras. One, my favorite camera to use for IR photography right now is my Fujifilm X20. I don't know if you guys remember that camera. It is a great camera. And it was one of my favorite semi-compact cameras that I carried around for a long time. And I have a little filter adapter for it. It does a pretty good job with infrared photography, and it's just really a blast. It's really fun to do photography with it because it doesn't take up that much space in my camera bag. So infrared photography, yes, indeed, it is a lot of fun. This is for those of us that are north of the equator, this is the perfect time of year to play with it. If you haven't fooled around with it and you don't have a camera, do that little test. Find one of your cameras, see which one pans out the best. Get yourself an infrared filter. They don't cost that much. And then when the middle of the day is just beaming down on you and you want to take pictures, get out that camera and that lens and go make something interesting. So these are five things that I just think are really a lot of fun. Try one of these, at least one of these this month. Let me know how it goes. What I'm guessing is that you'll come away with an image that you like, and possibly even one that you never dreamed that you could create. Court rules copying photos found on the internet is fair use. And this is an article on Petapixel. I have the link in the show notes. I'm going to just read you the first part of it here. A Virginia federal court has made a decision that photographers won't be happy to hear. The court ruled that finding a photo on the internet and using it without permission on a commercial website can be considered fair use, and then I added, in brackets, under the right conditions. I'll continue. In the United States, whether or not a use of copyrighted material without permission can be considered fair use depends on four main factors. Number one, the purpose and character of the use, including whether it's transformative and commercial versus non-commercial. Number two, nature of the copyrighted work. Number three, how much of the work is used, in other words, just a small portion of it or the whole image. And number four, how much the use affects the market and or value of the work. After considering these four factors, District Judge Claude M. Hilton of Eastern District of Virginia concluded that the defendant's use of the photographer's photo and the names and all that are in the article fit the criteria for fair use. And I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more about this. But it was very interesting, the story itself. If you're interested in this topic, I would go over to the article on Petapixel and read the entire story. Essentially, the photographer spotted this image being used by, I think it was a Virginia festival of some sort. He contacted them and said, hey, cease and desist. They actually took it down right away. So they took it down, and then it sort of feels like he got a little greedy here. Then he went ahead and sued them. And this lawsuit is the one that he lost. So there's a lot of factors and there's a lot of explanation going on here on how we ended up where this image was considered fair use even under these commercial circumstances. And the reason why I bring this up is that just like a lot of things that go to court or can go to court, you're never absolutely sure how it's going to go. There's a lot of different shades of gray to these sort of things. So my advice is that if this is something that you're concerned about, read this article, look at the circumstances, and then factor that in to your publishing online. Very interesting stuff, very interesting case. I'm sure we'll hear more about it. But the bottom line is that in some instances, someone can use your photo commercially and it can be considered fair use. Wow. It's a little bit of a shocker, isn't it? Do you have a camera that needs a good home? So I haven't talked about this for a while, but I think it's time to revisit it. Over the last year, I've received donations from Digital Story members who have film cameras that need a good home. So what I do is I inspect these cameras. I repair and clean them best I can. And then I list them for sale on the Film Camera Shop, which is something that I run. The link is in the show notes, and there's a tile on all the pages of the digital story, and I find a good home for them. And this has been a really fun project. People send me cameras that normally I wouldn't be looking for. They were cameras that maybe I haven't shot with or I never considered or anything like that. So, you know, I get these and then I get introduced to these new cameras, and it's fun for me to learn about them and to figure out how to get them cleaned up. And then it's fun for the people that shop on the Film Camera Shop because I have a wider variety of gear thanks to these donations from people in our virtual camera club. And almost everyone that has sent me cameras recently, they said, hey, I really appreciate the podcast. I really appreciate all the things you do. And this is one of the ways that I can say thank you for that. And that's like really cool. You know, so, I mean, thanks to some people that have sent me cameras lately, such as Paul Brown, Jane Beckman, Sally Harms, Kathleen McGee, Wendell Smith, Ken Walter, and a whole bunch of others. I mean, thank you guys for doing this. The way to do this, if you want to contribute also, is just use the contact form on the Nimble Photographer, thenimblephotographer.com, and then just click on contact and just say, you know, film camera donation. Just put that in the subject, and then, you know, it's just a simple form. You just fill it out. It takes less than a minute. And then I'll get back to you, and I'll give you the shipping address, and we'll talk about if you want to be reimbursed for postage or not and all that kind of stuff. And, we'll get it all set up. And then what happens is then when I get the cameras, I clean them up. You know, I try to get them ready for prime time and then get them into the Film Camera Shop as soon as possible so someone can buy them and put them to use. So this is a really fun project, and as I said, I appreciate Paul and Jane, Sally and Kathleen and Wendell and Ken and others who have contributed, and it'd be nice to add your name to that list if you have a camera that you're not using and you'd like to have it be a part of the Film Camera Shop. So anyway, the contact form on the Nimble Photographer is the best way to go. Of course, I have the links to everything in the show notes. Thank you to those who have donated, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes down the pike next. All right, just a few other things. I want to mention the Luminar Deep Dive Workshop that we're doing on July 21st here in Santa Rosa, California. If you're going to be in the Northern California area, you might want to come to this. This is going to be fun. It's going to be both myself and Angela from the Skylum online team. We've got a great program lined up. It's a half-day workshop. It's only $69, and we're really going to show you a lot of stuff. And as I mentioned before, Angela has great technical expertise and a nice complement to the things that I want to do, and she's already going to town on her topics. I'm going to really have to focus to keep up with her. So it's going to be a lot of fun. All the information is in the show notes. If you're interested on attending this on July 21st, just go to the show notes. There's links to registration and more detail about the event itself. Also, I've updated the directory of portfolios by TDS Photographers. We had a couple new portfolio pages come today. As you may recall, I set up this directory for people who have portfolio box sites, and I just want to share the work from our fellow virtual camera club members, you know, people who have put together a portfolio box site and really thought about their presentation. That's what these links are. It's a lot of fun to look and see, you know, how they're presenting their work, and helps us when we think about presenting our own. So that page has been updated, and the link is in the show notes as well. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members. There's a new video waiting for you, and I think I have another one ready to go also. This month's video is on lens corrections. So the one I have up right now is using DxO Optics, the editing extension for photos, and Luminar, doing lens corrections with those two pieces of very affordable software. And then I think I have a video ready to go, and if I do, I'll put it up this week on doing lens corrections also with Capture One Pro. So hopefully I'll cover, you know, all those different pieces of software, but lens corrections is sort of the theme for this month. This is my way of saying thank you to those who support this site through Patreon, our Inner Circle members. If you want to become an Inner Circle member and have that warm glow for helping support this project and have access to these videos and the other content that I put on our site, our Inner Circle site, just click on the tile that's on every page of the Digital Story, the Patreon tile, and that'll take you over to our page. You can check it out and see what's going on. And if you like what you see, you can go ahead and sign up there. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. They are the ones that support us month in and month out. I so appreciate everything that they do. I love their paper. Like I said last week, I'm getting close to testing that Canon printer. I've got some stuff I'm dying to print. Hopefully this week will be the week. Just need the world to slow down just a little bit so I can get that printer fired up and start printing. Those of you who print, you know what I'm talking about. It's something where you need to set aside like a half a day, like a half a Saturday or a Sunday or something, where you can just enjoy the printing process and create some artwork. I create all of my artwork with Red River Paper. They have a tile on every page of the Digital Story, and they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Alrighty, that is going to do it for me this week. Try at least one of those techniques I talked about. Shake it up a little bit. Go out there, get something new, and then if you get something that you like, let me know about it. I'll see you back here next week. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.